All right, we're going to call Senate Finance to order with us Senator Kelly, Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson, Senator Bishop, Vice Chair Fair Club, and myself, Senator Meyer. So what we'd like to do this morning is, and I apologize for the folks here to discuss or to testify on the smoking. We are going to get to that. But we have Senate Bill 193 that we should take up first, because I think it'll be fairly quick. I'm not anticipating too much discussion on that. So if you don't mind, Senate Bill 193 first, and then we'll go right back to the Senate Bill 209, Regulation of Smoking. So is there any questions before we get started? Okay, so we now have before us Senate Bill 193. Senator Machicki, is he? Yep, there he is. Senator Machicki, looks like this is the Machicki Day. We've got two of your bills up before us. If you could, Senator, describe Senate Bill 193 and what it does. So the floor is yours, sir.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of Senate Finance, purpose of construction bonds is primarily to provide consumer protection in the event of incomplete or incorrect work. Bonds are important for business. However, bond amounts have not been updated since 1982. That's back when you were in high school, Mr. Chairman. And current bond rates are $10,000 for general contractors, $5,000 for specialty. But if you consider that a bathroom remodel can easily exceed $5,000, the bond balances are quickly drained and aggrieved parties are unable to be made whole, which is why the Association of General Contractors of Alaska and I, along with the Alaska Home Builders Association, request, I don't even want to say an increase, I want to say an update to bond rates. So what Senate Bill 193 does, it increases the rate for general contractors to $25,000. It adds a new residential-only endorsement for general contractors with a bond amount of $20,000. Mechanical or special contractor bonds will increase to $10,000. And it brings down the cost of being a handyman by a new category that is a $5,000 bond limit. So like any consumer, contractors shop around for bond insurers, even at the highest rate of 18%. The increase for a specialty contractor would be about $900 a year. And we spoke to a contractor who, by shopping around, his increase of the new bond rate was $125 a year, and that's at the second highest bond rate, third highest bond rate, the $10,000 one. Just to close, what I want to say is that with the new handyman bond, I want to make it clear this doesn't apply to those situations where do-it-yourselfers and can still accept payment from a friend, relative, or neighbor for undertaking a small project, or those, the example that was used, the two kids that come back for college for the summer can still go paint a house. It's not about that. It's about just protecting our consumers in the building industry. So we've heard no outright opposition to the bill. You'll see several letters of support in your packet, and we have Assistant Attorney General Ed Sniffen on the line, I believe.
Yes, we have Ed Sniffen online, as well as Al Nagel.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and what Ed Sniffen can help explain is how the current bond rates actually hamper the Department of Law's ability in its consumer protection activities. So this bill's really kind of about modernization and fairness.
Okay. Questions? One question I would have is, Senator Machicki, how does this impact the small guy, the small handyman guy that makes his living by just going around fixing odds and ends for folks?
Well, it doesn't. If he's got a business where he advertises, or he's got a sign on his truck, it doesn't affect him. Actually, the only way it affects him is it saves him about $250 a year, because currently he would have to be bonded as the next highest level of contractor. So now he only has that $5,000 level. So it saves them about $250 a year on some of the highest rates we could find for that lower bond level.
Okay.
I want to make something clear, Mr. Chairman. If someone chooses to not follow the law, the current law, and not be bonded as a contractor, they still have the ability to do that. This doesn't affect that. It doesn't change a thing. But it does provide savings for those smaller contractors that are operating fully bonded, licensed, and insured.
Okay. Questions, Senator Dunleavy?
Through the chair. I've got some questions, but to be honest with you, I don't know how those will be answered until we see how this plays out. I mean, I've had conversations with Senator Chickie, and I've had people come to me with some concerns, but again, it's somewhat confusing. And I'm not questioning the senator. I'm just trying to. Last couple of days, I've been trying to get a handle on this, and it's tough for myself. So the average person that, if they do, may I ask a question to the senator Bachicki?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
To the best of your knowledge, Senator, so if somebody's doing $5,000 worth of work, how does this change that person?
Senator, are they advertising their work?
Let's say they're not.
Okay, let's say they're not, then this would, my understanding is this would change it if they're not advertising. For the few that don't advertise, that are doing $5,000 worth of work, this would add that requirement to them.
And what was that requirement again?
That is the bonding at the $5,000 level, which is the only thing this changes is the bonding. It doesn't change the other existing law. So it would add about $250 a year to their business cost for this bond.
Okay. And if they advertise, how would that change anything?
Well, it wouldn't under this law.
Okay.
Well, actually, I'm sorry. It would. It would save them because now they could advertise and be under the handyman category and not the mechanical or special contractor bond, which would have been at a higher level at the $10,000 level. So it actually saves them money if they're advertising. If they're not advertising, in order for them to operate legally, it would, under the bond requirements of 193, it would cost them about $250 a year more.
Okay, thanks. I'm fine.
Senator Bishop?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just looking through the letters of support and especially looking here at David Hale's letter from independent brokers, insurance agents, and the contractor letters that are in our packet, and I could see benefit for everybody. You know, it's spelled out. The sponsor's doing a good job of doing that. But I went down to like the fourth bullet here, and this could also be an advantage for these smaller contractors because it's going to give confidence to the creditors that they'll be able to bond and bond these projects, which would then extend maybe credit to complete a project or get funding to start the project. So I just have one question. You said Al Nagel's on the line?
Yes, he is. Uh-huh. You have a question for Al? Okay, Al, are you online, sir?
Mr. Chairman, I am here.
Okay, Senator Bishop has a question for you. Senator Bishop, go ahead.
I just had one question. Al, what's the department's position on the bill?
At this point, through the chair, Senator Bishop, we're neutral on it at this point. I can tell you there are some benefits both to the consumers and to the current group of business people that are operating under the current handyman law. This would allow them, right now they're prohibited from advertising in any way that would lead a reasonable person to believe they're a contractor. By requiring bonding, and they are a licensed contractor at that point. It would open up their opportunities for business. It would open up their opportunities to advertise.
Okay, so thank you, Al.
Okay, very good. Senator Dunleavy?
Mr. Nagel, it's Senator Dunleavy. Just a quick question. From your perspective, is what groups could be negatively impacted by the bill, if any?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I don't think anybody is disadvantaged, to use a word. It will increase the costs a little bit, and I think the sponsor pointed out about $250 a year. For those individuals who are currently operating solely under a business license, they are not a licensed contractor at this point. However, under current law, if they're taking on a project that is valued at $2,500 or more, they already have to carry the same liability insurance of a general contractor, which is, I might add, the largest expense is the insurance itself, not the bonding. So what it does, again, not to repeat myself, but it does afford them the opportunity by being bonded to advertise wider and to protect their customers more and provide a service that's, that provides some consumer protection.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and take the public testimony at this time and then come back for questions. Senator Olson?
I'm going to have a question to the sponsor or whoever is his designee. Is how does this affect owner-builders? Say if I'm going to go ahead and build a hangar or something on a property that I'm leasing, say, from the state at an airport, am I affected by this bill?
It doesn't.
Does not affect.
Unless you're hiring a contractor for some of the work, they would be bonded under these requirements. But if you're actually doing the building, then it doesn't affect you. You're not a contractor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. There's no other questions. Let's go to public testimony. It's all on online, so you can stay there, Senator Bajicki. At least, is there anybody here in Juneau to speak on this bill, Senate Bill 193? Okay, seeing none here in Juneau, let's go then offline to John McKinnon with the Associated General Contractors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John McKinnon. I'm the Executive Director of the Associated General Contractors of Alaska. We're a construction trade association representing approximately 650 Alaska businesses in the construction industry. We started working on this about 4 years ago and began by engaging the other construction trade associations, the electrical contractors, mechanical contractors, Associated Builders and Contractors, or ABC, and the state and local home builders associations. But 4 years ago, the home building market wasn't that robust, and as a result, we didn't proceed then. Last year, the home building market greatly improved, and we decided to move ahead with this and worked on levels that were acceptable to all. Some wanted higher levels of bond limit set, but, you know, we arrived at a level that we could all agree on, and it turns out that that level was very close to what the 1982 levels would be had they been adjusted for inflation. SB 193 is about increasing the bond amounts for contractors. It's about making people in the contracting business get a license and a bond. That the kid next door, your brother-in-law, can still build a fence for you without getting a license and a bond. But if that person starts building a lot of fences and advertising, that they have to become legitimate. It's not about limiting competition. It's about making competition fair, and it's an important piece of Alaska consumer protection laws. Since this bill was introduced and I started circulating information about it among my members, I was really amazed at the number of vendors that called me and said this is a great piece of legislation, because it's not uncommon for them to get stuck with unpaid bills. And when that happens, the only recourse they have is to go after the bond or lien the property. When they lien the property, they often involve an innocent property owner. But by going after the bond, it gives them the protection and the protection they need. So, on that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions there might be.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Mr. McKinnon. Questions for Mr. McKinnon? Okay, seeing here none. Thank you very much, John, for joining us this morning. Was there anybody else online? Okay, and no one else here in Juneau, then we're going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 193. Additional questions, comments? Okay, seeing and hearing none, fiscal note shows indeterminate. Why would that be, Senator Bajicki? I guess I could read the backup here.
Well,
go ahead.
The department is unsure whether or not there'll be a change in revenue due to the new levels or the new handyman bond. We have visited with them and are asking them to reconsider on the house side because we feel that the effects will be negligible, if any.
Okay. Anything else, committee members? Seeing, hearing none, Senator Kelly, do you have a motion? Senate Bill 193, it's just the, Okay, brief it ease. All right, we're back. Senator Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill number 193, version N from committee, with attached fiscal notes.
And individual recommendations.
And individual recommendations. No.
Is there an objection of the bill moving from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations? Seeing, hearing none, bill moves out of committee. We'll take a brief at ease. We're back. Just so the committee knows, Senate Bill 220 we will not take up this morning, perhaps this afternoon after the floor session. So we're going to continue with Senate Bill 209 and, if time permits, and Senate Bill 141. And on Senate Bill 209, let's see, we already had the sponsors introduce the bill to us. We had several people testify here in Juneau yesterday, so now we want to continue the public testimony. And we're going to go, looks like, Kenai first, the Kenai LIO. I think it's Mr. Patmore.
Yes, I used to be a cigarette smoker. In fact, when I was in the Army at
Sir, I'm sorry. Sir. I'm sorry, before we get started here, first thing you need to do is give us your name and who you're representing, and then also try to keep your testimony to about two to three minutes. So with that, go ahead with your testimony, sir.
Yes, I'm Brother Tom Patmore. I live in Clam Gulch, and I used to be a cigarette smoker back when I was in the Army at North Carolina. I used to go over to the field office, swim underwater across the pool every night. That's where I was smoking a lot of cigarettes, and I cut my consumption down to three per day for three consecutive days. I went over, then I noticed I could swim clear across and stay underwater for 4 or 5 seconds. That wasn't even from completely quitting. That was just from knocking my consumption down for three consecutive days. If people could compare their breathing before while they're smoking a lot of cigarettes to afterward, they'd never start again once they quit. And I've noticed when I was up in Fairbanks a few years ago, I was driving by one of the banks, and it was about 50 below zero, and there's a half dozen employees standing outside the door smoking cigarettes, you know. Three or four of them, I don't even had coats on, you know. They figured, well, I'm just going to go out there for a few seconds. I don't need to get my coat on, you know. Well, the banks are concerned about their employees. They don't want them to die of cancer, but unfortunately, they're going to end up dying of pneumonia or something if they have to stay out there in that cold too long. But what's needed at places like that is a smoking room where they can, where all the smokers can go in there, smoke their cigarettes, and come out and not be exposed to everybody else to it. And plus, I think another thing that would help if they had ex-smokers testify at all schools, if we can keep the young kids from ever starting to smoke cigarettes, we won't have no problem once they become adults. And that's basically about all I have to say about it.
Great. Thank you for your testimony, sir, and thank you for joining us this morning. All right, Jenny Lendorf?
Close.
Okay.
Good morning. I'm Jenny Ohlendorf. I live in Sterling. I work in Soldotna. I'm here today to briefly testify in support of SB 209. For 5 years, I worked in a mall next to a business that allowed smoking. The exposure to secondhand smoke got so bad at times that staff actually had to leave the office early. The landlord would not require that the adjacent business have their employees and patrons smoke outside, so finally in 2012, we moved out and began renting a space in a smoke-free building. No worker should ever have to choose between their health and their job. Please pass SB 209 without a local opt-out provision and with the inclusion of e-cigarettes. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and just an aside to Senator Michicki that it is officially snowing in District O today.
Great. That's a beautiful day here in Juneau. Okay. Well, thank you, Jenny. Let's go on now to Crystal Schoenrock. Schoenrock.
Hi. My name is Crystal Schoenrock. I own the 4-inch bar. And I commend these people that quit smoking, but some of them don't want to quit. I have talked to my patrons. I have some smokers and some non-smokers. They know what the non-smokers know what they're getting into when they come into my bar. I just talked with one of my bartenders that don't work, and she told me that if she didn't like the smoke, she could always quit, and she has no intention of quitting. So my problem is, why shouldn't the smokers have a few rights, too? We need our rights as well as the non-smokers. A lot of these people don't know where my establishment is, has never been in it, will never be in it, don't know me, doesn't matter. But they don't need to cram it down our throat that we have to have non-smoking in our establishment, because the smokers have rights also, and they should have a place to go. There are so many non-smoking places around, and we are such a small community that I feel that we should have a few rights, or it's like taking away our rights and the government telling us what to do. And I'm just not for this. It should be my choice. I pay my license and all my permits and everything, and I can't afford to lose 30% of my business, nor can I afford to lose 10% of it. I've talked with my patrons that are smokers and non-smokers, and they all agree that it should not change, that there should be places that people can go, and if they wish not to be around smoking, then they don't come in. I got them that come in to socialize, play pool, play darts. And that's basically the 1800s. That's why they had saloons, so the men could leave and get away from the wife and kids and go down and socialize, have a big drink, and have a cigar. So I just feel that it's infringing more on our rights, that everybody is supposed to follow this little guideline that everybody wants them to, and it's not going to make that big a difference because they're not going to be in my place anyway. There should be a place that smokers can go and feel at ease and relaxed and have a good time also. Okay. That's all I have to say on it. For now.
Great. Thank you, Crystal. Susan Smollett.
Good morning. Thank you. I have sent in written testimony. I am Susan Smollett from Kenai, Alaska, and I would just like to share a couple additional things. I've volunteered for about 10 years at the hospital, and smoking, secondhand smoke, is something that the community shares, and the community shares the cost of. I am a survivor. I support Bill 209. I don't support the opt-out, nor do I support accepting e-cigarettes. The effects of smoking, whether it's heart, lung, or cancer, are carried by the entire community, because when someone goes into the hospital, they are treated, whether or not they have the ability to pay. And only if you care about the economics. I mean, there's one aspect, but certainly caring about a safe workplace for workers so that it isn't a choice about choosing a job place by whether the air is toxic or not. So I thank you for hearing our testimony, and have a great day.
Great. Thank you, Susan. John Parker.
Good morning, Chairman Meyer. Thank you. My name is John Parker. I'm the president of Integrated Robotics in Kenai, and I have a smoking habit, but I support Senate Bill 209. When I go to my favorite lounge for dinner with my wife, I have a cigarette, but I don't light up. As I walk into the grocery store, I have a cigarette, but I don't light up. And when I enter the hospital with my wife, who recently had two nebulizer treatments for an acute attack of asthma specifically diagnosed as caused by secondhand cigarette smoke, we had a cigarette, but we didn't light up. I have all these cigarettes, and the last time I purchased a pack of cigarettes was 1967, when they cost 25 cents. It all comes from secondhand cigarette smoke, which is known to cause at least 3,000 new lung cancer deaths each year, and is thought to cause approximately 46,000 heart disease-related deaths each year as well. Regardless of what some misinformed people are saying, it is an absolute fact that cigarette smoking and secondhand smoke are killing our citizens. If you accept that fact, then I say it's insanity not to require smokers to take it outside when they frequent public places in our state. That's something that many communities and states have already achieved without the claimed adverse economic impacts purported by smokers. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. Let us do the same thing and pass Senate Bill 209. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony, John. Gary Superman.
Gary Superman. I own the Hunger Hut Bar, Liquor Store, Motel in Nikiskie. I sit on the Alaska State Char Board. I'm not going to debate the fact that cigarettes make some people uncomfortable, but if the science upon which this crusade is based has been debunked, the foundation do these bills that allow state coercion have? If you're not familiar with the controversy created by the Congressional Research Agency or the decision handed down by Judge Osteen of the United States District Court, then you have no business moving this out of committee. What this bill boils down to is an attack on the remaining few bars that allow smoking in their establishments. And it caters to the agenda of professional activists hell-bent on implementing their conception of public purity and what public behavior should be and where. We've become a society that is daily bombarded by rebuttals of truth and outright lies, even by our highest leadership. If you like your doctor, or if you like your insurance company, you can keep it. There's nothing amiss in Benghazi. There's not even a smidgen of corruption at the IRS. Even yesterday, our president told us he refutes the claim that voter fraud exists when evidence came out contrary to that the day before. In other words, it's become extremely difficult for many to separate the wheat from the chaff. And it's hard to make a rational decision of support when it comes to issues like this without an extreme commitment to truth. This has become about emotionalism and falling prey to political hucksters. Keep them confused. Even the sponsor of this bill proclaims at every committee meeting he's a less government type of guy, yet he's all for this paternalistic, authoritarian dribble. Make no mistake, this is a taking. You are taking away my right to choose what kind of establishment I run. You are taking away the rights of my patrons to enjoy themselves in the way they choose. And you are taking away whatever slim margin remains in running this kind of business, because there will be a significant loss of trade. These are all takings, and I ask you for what end? Thanks.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, Patricia Patterson.
Good morning. My name is Patricia Patterson. I'm the owner of Lucky Lady Tobacco in Soldotna, Alaska. I'm a complete tobacco store. I sell pipe tobacco, e-cigarettes, cigars, you name it. I'm a 100% adult facility, which is in accordance with Alaska law. I'm actually one of the few businesses that received an exemption on Bill 209, thanks to my senator. My store is designed with top-of-the-line ventilation made for removing cigarette and cigar smoke out of the building, to the point that at about 25 below, we had a keep-the-building-warm problem. I am the responsible place for consumers to come, because 100% of my people use tobacco. 100% of the people who work for me use tobacco. But one of the things that's been really bothering me during listening to this committee is the word smoker. We lose base on who a smoker is. The only reason that a smoker at this point who uses e-cigarettes is called a smoker is because of what this bill has defined it as. E-cigarettes are not smoking. They are currently being studied by the Food and Drug Administration, but it is not smoking. You have decided it's smoking. So I beg you to be careful, because you are lumping quite a bit into this bill and making it much broader and much more heavy-handed and much more regulated than it really needs to be. Who else are smokers? Pipe tobacco. I have gentlemen that come in and smoke a pipe once a day. Who else are smokers? Tourists, who spend thousands of dollars coming to our state, and all they want is a cigar to celebrate. Not all smokers are cigarette smokers. We have to stop losing such that tobacco use is much more broad. I also sell hookah tobacco, which is made of fruit. There's not a piece of tobacco in that. It's all fruit. Is this included? Not included. I'm not too sure. Smokers are your friends, your families, your neighborhood. We are responsible Alaskans. There are very few places left to smoke in this state. I'm trying to figure out what this bill is curing. I can only think of about a handful of the Kenai Peninsula that still allows smoking. So this is, I think, why you're getting this from all of us, which is you're really aiming it at very few businesses left. Most businesses are non-smoking. There is a small outdoor smoking area at one of our local bars. I think it's called Main Street. This would go away. You actually leave. You actually can take your drink, walk to an outdoor area that's quite cold, sit down. No minors can get in because it's an alcohol place, and sit out there and have a cigarette and go back in. Technically, the bar is smoke-free. They won't serve you out there, but you've taken that away. There's one business in our town that's taken the responsibility to make an environment that would allow smokers to have a smoke. It would also allow their bar to stay smoke-free. You've taken that away in this. You've taken away the ability for the Kenai Senior Center to have their little small smoking lounge for their two or three residents. And I'll tell you, at age 75, if I want a Swisher Sweet, God damn it, I'm going to have one.
Patricia,
this bill is not really changing anything other than taking away the few places that do that allow smoking. And there are very, very few. So be careful on the heavy-handedness of the bill. Is it really needed, or is it just excessive government doing it because they can? Thank you.
All right. Please do limit your testimony to 2 minutes, and please do not use any profound language. Okay, we're going to go on now to Kodiak. Kodiak, LIO, Carmen Lundy.
Thank you and good morning, and for this opportunity to speak to you. My name is Carmen Lundy, and I'm the director of Kodiak Char. I am speaking for our members and many others who have contacted me regarding this matter. I realize defending smokers is a thankless task in today's politically correct environment. I feel SB 209 is targeting bars because people haven't smoked in the many other places mentioned in this bill for many, many years. I strongly believe each individual business owner should have the right to decide how to run their business and should not be mandated by government restrictions. In Kodiak, we use common sense. We have 14 non-smoking establishments and 8 smoking establishments, giving every adult free choice. I'm asking you to stop legislating personal freedoms and choices. It shows a complete disrespect for all those who have given their lives for our personal freedoms. It goes without saying smoking bans violate private property rights. Punishing smokers for their own good is repulsive to basic freedoms of choice, and I don't feel government has any role in making these choices. We are adults. If one does not want to go to a smoking bar, they, as in Kodiak, have many other choices. I believe the anti-smoking campaigns by the EPA, community health organizations, and the Tobacco Alliance to demonize smokers and all forms of tobacco is seriously flawed. They toss around their so-called facts and tend to spin the true facts out of recognition. In regards to what Gary Superman just said from Kenai, in 1993, the EPA published a report about secondhand smoke. The tobacco companies questioned this report and took them to court. In July of 1998, U.S. District Judge William Osteen ruled against the EPA, saying the agency disregarded information and made findings based on selective information, deviated from its own risk assessment guidelines, failed to disclose important opposing findings and reasonings, and left significant questions without answers. And he threw this report out of court. This EPA report has not only been the basis for most of the contentions about secondhand smoke, but also the basis for most of the legislation that has crept across the country. Spin doctors have taken from this report what they wanted to take further their cause, ignoring Judge Osteen's finding the report was extremely flawed. Thank you for your time.
Okay, great. Thank you for your testimony. Okay, let's go now to George Gatter, also in Kodiak.
Yes, good morning. My name is George Gatter, Jr. from Kodiak. I have Tony's Bar, which is a smoking facility. Tony's is 80th anniversary this year, and the Navigator Lounge, which is created last year, which is a non-smoking bar at the Kodiak State Airport. right now they're saying we have a 50% non-smoking throughout Alaska. And this is a big tug of war. And I think when you can have a tug of war and you have 50% smoking and 50% non-smoking, that sounds pretty good to me. I think 50% of anything makes both parties pretty much happy. But obviously with this bill, that hasn't. There's some key words to this bill: adults, private property, smoking, and adult employees. These words, just in general, sound pretty consenting to me. Laws and lies should be written to protect underage youth and people that can't protect themselves. Employees have a right to breathe non-smoking facility, but they also have a right to seek employment somewhere else. This penalty is full of this bill is full of penalties and violations that can be written to a person on private property. I want to clear up a definition they're using in this bill: public area. While both of my businesses are open to the public, it remains private property to do as I wish, employees or not. I'm very surprised that every Alaskan, smoking or non-smoking, is not concerned how this bill lets the government come in and impose laws on private property against its owners. And as far as a leveling play field with businesses, the non-smoking facilities want everyone to go non-smoking because the businesses are suffering. They're hurting. They want people to go elsewhere. So, thank you.
Great, George. Thank you very much for that testimony. Thank you, Senator Machicki, for donuts. Okay, we're going to go on. Was that your phone, Senator Machicki? You don't have your phone with you? Okay, somebody's phone back there. It's online. Yeah, I thought it was online. Okay.
I'm going to remember that answer.
Okay. Well, you can bring your donuts anyway, Senator Machicki. I thought I heard a cell phone go off, but I think it was online. So, sorry about that, Senator Machicki. All right. Let's go to the next. By the way, that is kind of the rules here in the committee room, that if your cell phone goes off, we get donuts. So just fair warning. All right. Becky Stapa in Mat-Su Valley.
Hi, my name is Becky Stopa. I am a Wasilla resident, and I am speaking in support of SB 209. I do not support an exclusion for e-cigarettes, and I do not support an opt-out provision. The purpose of this bill is to protect workers from secondhand smoke, so it is therefore inherently wrong to allow some municipalities to deny that workplace protection. Please support SB 209 and help protect the right of all Alaskan workers to breathe smoke-free air. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Great. Thank you, Becky. Sarah Wilbur.
Good morning. I'm Sarah Wilbur from Wasilla, and I work in Willow. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me this morning. I support smoke-free workplaces. Nobody should have to choose between their health and a paycheck. I do not support an exclusion for e-cigarettes or the opt-out provision. Everyone has a right to breathe clean air. Please pass this law and support that right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sarah. Ashley Patel?
Help here?
Help here. Okay. Hey, very good. Ashley, go ahead, please.
Hi, and thank you for hearing me today. My name is Ashley Peltier, and I live in Bolton, Wasilla. 4 years ago, I was one of the 75% of tobacco users that wanted to quit. I am proud to say that I am now an ex-smoker. That's something that I would not have been able to do without the help of my smoke-free workplace. I support Senate Bill 209. I do not support an opt-out provision or exclusion for e-cigarettes. Everyone has the right to breathe smoke-free air. I ask you to protect that right by passing this law.
Great. Thank you very much, sir. Terry Snyder.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Terry Snyder. I'm a City of Paul resident, and I'm calling support of SB 209, the smoke-free workplace bill, before you. I do not support not including e-cigarettes in this legislation. It's a conservative approach to regulation while the information and the risk and benefits are evaluated. It's important to note that this bill is not a ban on these products or cigarettes, just asking that users take it outside to protect us all. Thank you for hearing my testimony, and I urge you to pass this to allow all Alaska workers the right to breathe smoke-free air.
Great, thank you. And I do appreciate the brevity. We have several people who want to testify, and our days here in June are short. So, Elizabeth Ripley.
Thank you, Senator Meyer, members of the committee. My name is Elizabeth Ripley, and I'm the executive director of the Mat-Su Health Foundation, which shares ownership in Mat-Su Regional and invests our profits back into the Mat-Su community to improve the health and wellness of Alaskans living in Mat-Su. And today I support SB 209. While we are making great headway, Alaska still has some of the highest tobacco use rates in the nation, which bumps up our chronic respiratory disease rates, such as bronchitis, asthma, and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. Tobacco use costs Alaska $579 million annually in direct medical costs and lost productivity due to tobacco-related death. Strengthening Alaska's smoke-free public and workplace statutes will help reduce these costs and will also reduce Medicaid costs. A recent analysis looked at the results of 11 studies encompassing more than 2.5 million births and nearly 250,000 asthma attacks, and found that the number of premature births and children's hospital visits for asthma dropped 10% in parts of the United States, Canada, and Europe barely a year after they enacted smoking bans. Strong smoke-free laws change social norms about smoking and actually lead to more people implementing smoke-free policies in their homes, and that's one of the reasons why smoke-free policies have such a direct impact on children's health. Medicaid is the payer source for the majority of babies born in Mat-Su, at Mat-Su Regional, and across much of Alaska. You can look at the cost of Medicaid asthma admissions and premature births to see what a 10% drop in these admissions would save Alaska the very next year after the ban. The newly appointed Medicaid Reform Advisory Group would appreciate the cost savings. An earlier analysis of the impact of smoking bans on adult health demonstrated a 15% reduction in cardiovascular events. Every community that has instituted these smoking bans has seen this decrease in heart attacks. On behalf of our citizens, Alaska needs a more robust clean indoor air statute. SB 209 is the next step in further reducing smoking rates and secondhand smoke exposure in Alaska. It's the next step in raising the health status of all Alaskans. The Mat-Su Health Foundation Board unanimously supports this bill and does not support the local opt-out provision or any e-cigarette exemption. We respectfully ask you to expedite its passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Next in line to testify in Mat-Su, Robin Menard, followed by Janet Kincaid. Robin, welcome to the Senate.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Robin Menard, and I live in Wasilla, and I strongly support SB 209. Boroughs like Mat-Su don't have health powers, and we need your help to get this protection. It surprises me that some people have painted SB 209 as an infringement on their freedom to smoke, when in reality it's about the freedom to not have to breathe secondhand smoke. There's nothing in this bill about taking away anyone's rights. All it does is enforce all of our right to breathe clean air. There's been no proof of any loss of business in communities like Anchorage and Palmer that have already gone smoke-free. And in a lot of places in rural Alaska, the only place you can work is a place full of smoke, maybe a bar or a restaurant. A person should not have to choose between employment and being exposed to secondhand smoke. So please, pass SB 209 this session. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robin. Janet Kincaid.
Good morning. I want to say, first off, I appreciate your stamina in watching these hearings. I've been watching Gavel to Gavel for some time, and it's a wonderful service that you do to our community. As a business owner and an individual, I strongly support Senate Bill 209. I have personally watched the ravages of emphysema, and in most cases, almost 95%, it's caused by smoking or secondhand smoke. Anything we can do to defer that is a help. I want to speak, when I spoke before the House, most of the testimony opposed to this was with the e-cigarettes. I want to say the ingredients that are in e-cigarettes are not regulated. Mostly they're imported from China. There's no long-term studies to show the effect. So I urge you to keep that in. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Janet. Moving to Anchorage, and then we'll be back in Mat-Su in a few minutes. We are taking the names as they've been coming in. In the Anchorage LAO, Mike Gutierrez. 2 minutes, please.
Madam Chairman, with regard to your request for brevity, I will certainly do so. My name is Mike Gutierrez. I am the grassroots manager for Alaska for the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. And I would like to, first of all, thank all of you for your time and attention to this very important issue. Thanks particularly to Senator Machicki for taking this up and bringing it to the public attention. I strongly support SB 209, and I urge you to swiftly move this on for passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for testifying. Next in Anchorage, Marge Stoneking.
Thank you. This is Marge Stoneking. I'm with the American Lung Association. I represent the more than 50,000 Alaskans who suffer from asthma, myself included. Secondhand smoke is one of the few things that scientists agree upon that is linked to the development of asthma. I myself worked as a waitress in several restaurants around Alaska in my 20s. I now have asthma, though I worked in the non-smoking section. Since 2007, I've been able to go anywhere in Anchorage with my freedom to breathe and not have an asthma attack. Until just recently, when I suffered an asthma attack due to an e-cigarette in a movie theater with my children. Please move Senate Bill 209 swiftly through to create the freedom to breathe for all the folks with lung challenges. Thank you.
Marge, thank you for testifying today. Next on the list is Heather Arno. Heather, are you there? Followed by Dale Fox.
Hello, my name is Heather Arono. I am a resident of Anchorage and I support a statewide smoke-free indoor workplace law. No one should have to choose between a job and their health. I support the inclusion of e-cigarettes as well. It's reasonable to ask people who choose to smoke or use e-cigarettes the courtesy of not forcing that choice on others and take it outside. Please pass this bill. Thank you.
Heather, thank you for your brevity. Dale Fox?
Thank you. My name is Dale Fox, and I'm here as the president and CEO of Alaska Char. I'd like to speak against SB 209. Bars, who I represent, should be exempt from this law because, unlike public buildings and airplanes of the past, no one is required to go into a bar, and everyone who goes into a bar is an adult, just like the smoke shop in Kenai that was exempted earlier. Because the majority of the population does not smoke, many bars have decided to go non-smoking to cater to that market, just as Carmen told you about Kodiak, where more than half the bars are non-smoking. As a result, there are a number of smoking and non-smoking venues, and people around the state have a freedom to choose. They can choose a smoking bar, or they can choose a non-smoking bar. The ban has many of my members really frightened and angry. Frightened because many establishments report significant losses in revenue after a smoking ban is put in place. Just because the proponents of the bill have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to tell you that smoking bans are good for business does not make it true. I'll challenge them here and now to make up the difference. If you truly believe, as they testified in a previous hearing, that revenues would go up, let's just take the tax returns from those establishments that lose business, and either the state or the Lung Association could make up the difference. Let's indemnify those guys. But they won't do that because it's hogwash. Many establishments lose up to 30% of their business. Many other members around the state are angry
Dale, your
angry
time is
because
up.
They've had this discussion in their local community.
Dale, your time is up. If you could give us a closing remark.
Yes, I will. If legislators really believe in less government and self-determination of local communities, they should not vote for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list in the Anchorage LIO, Brendan Doyle, followed by Isaac Howell. Brendan, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee.
Thank you. My name is Brendan Doyle. I'm here representing the HA Vapors Club and all the e-cigarette users. I have to oppose the bill because it's one, like it's been said before, everyone has the right to go into a smoking establishment or not. You don't have to. And as far as the bill including e-cigarettes, you know, my children have never lived in a smoking environment. They have never been subjected to that. I mean, they have asthma. You know, I don't think it's something that was condoned by the cigarettes or the e-cigarettes for that matter. I quit smoking and for the first time in my life I had 100% oxygen level when I went to the doctors. It's never been above 97. My boss would have to oppose the bill as well because now that I quit smoking and I do vape in my office, I work an extra 2 hours a day, not taking 10-minute breaks every hour to go outside to smoke a cigarette. I think that lumping e-cigarettes in with the smoking industry isn't fair to us as far as the health risks aren't there. You know, propylene glycol has been used as an air sanitizer for years, has been used in inhalers. So to say that the secondary effects of vapor is the same as cigarette smoke is just unfair. You know, that's all I have. I believe that, you know, people have a choice. You know, to tell me that I can't go into a vapor establishment and vape, you know, I have the right to be there. You know, the people that come in there know what they're walking into. You know, you wouldn't go into a vapor establishment and sit there and subject yourself to people vaping if you didn't want to. Just like I wouldn't go to a bar that allowed smoking if I didn't smoke. You know, as far as I don't vape inside buildings. I don't vape in the movie theaters or the restaurants or the grocery store, you know, but I should have the right to be able to vape in my office or in a establishment that's based on the product. That's all I really have. I have to say that if you want a choice, you know, you have to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Doyle. Next in Anchorage, Isaac Howell, followed by Brian Catone. Isaac, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee.
My name is Isaac Howell. I represent Cold Base 907. I'm the owner. And I strongly oppose parts of this bill, including e-cigarettes into the bill. Does not make sense to me. There's about 9 shops out of 10 that will be affected greatly. We will have to shut down and relocate into a standalone establishment. And we, in Anchorage, there are not many standalone establishments. There will be, personally, for me, there will be 4 employees that will be laid off. They will be costing the state money because they're going to be on unemployment benefits. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on there. I offer insurance, and they do take the insurance. It's going to be a financial burden on the state for me for quite some time. I've been looking for a standalone shop to open up, and there is not property available for me to get into a standalone shop. So my doors will be shut down until I can find somewhere to adequately, if this passes, it's going to be really hard for me to get somewhere to be employed and have employment for my clients that work for me. And there's, from everything that I've seen, it's kind of hard for an e-cigarette to cause an asthma attack when almost all of the ingredients that are in an e-cigarette are in an asthma inhaler. The PG, the VG, it's all in an asthma inhaler, so it's actually what people use to stop an asthma attack. I don't really know. I'm really at a loss for words about this bill, so I strongly oppose it. That's what I got.
Mr. Howell, thank you for testifying today. Brian Catone, followed by David Hubbard in Anchorage. Brian, welcome to Senate Finance.
Good morning. I would ask that you afford me the same abilities yesterday as the individual.
Brian, if you could identify yourself. Brian, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Can you hear me?
Brian, if you could identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry?
If you could state your name for the record.
My name is Brian, last name Caton.
Thank you.
I'm the owner and operator of Northern Lights Vapor Company. We manufacture and distribute e-liquid used in e-cigarettes, personal nicotine vaporizer accessories. I would like to read from the Alaska State Constitution. Our inherent rights. This Constitution is dedicated to the principles that all persons have a natural right to life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, and the enjoyment of the rewards of their own industry. And because of that, I ask you to oppose this bill. You are taking away our civil rights and our freedom of choice. We as Americans have those rights. We have the ability to choose. And when government gets in the way of that, it is taking those rights away from us. Just as I have the right to walk down the streets, walk into a vape shop of my own volition, and be subjected to whatever is in the air, those are my rights. Just as it is someone's right to not walk in there, to walk into a bar that allows smoking, just as another individual has that right to not walk in there. I strongly encourage you to rethink the wording of this bill to include electronic cigarettes. There is not enough studies being done to prove any of the facts that have been brought up today during these testimonies. What you are doing is infringing upon each and every one of our civil liberties. You are taking our freedom of choice away from us. That goes against the Alaska Constitution. It goes against the Constitution of these United States. I implore you, to rethink your decision on this and to please allow more time to be given into this before blindly and swiftly passing through a law that has been using the testimony, that is pulling on the heartstrings of individuals who have spent their life using a product that is not correlated with electronic cigarettes.
Mr. Canton, your time.
For an individual to speak smoking.
Brian, your time is
without
up. Do you have a closing sentence?
I'm sorry?
Your time is up. Could you close with one sentence?
What? May I ask why I'm not being given the same amount of time as the individuals who testified in front of you yesterday were given?
Sir, you're giving them the same amount of time. We have 2 minutes.
That is incorrect. That individual I timed him yesterday was given 12 minutes, 38 seconds. Do I not have the same rights and freedoms as he did?
Mr. Canton, we had invited testimony yesterday from a select group. The chairman allowed that. We're in public
hearing. Why was I not invited?
Thank you, Mr. Canton, for your testimony. Moving to the Matsu, Melissa Mudd.
Okay. Good morning. Can you hear me?
We can. Melissa, welcome to Senate Finance. Your testimony, name for the record first.
I'm Melissa Mudd. Hello. Good morning. I am a 32-year resident of Palmer, Alaska, and I support smoke-free indoor workplaces. I support the inclusion of e-cigarettes, and I do not support the local opt-out. You said you wanted brevity, so yeah, here it is. Please pass this bill. Thank you.
Melissa, thank you for your testimony. Returning to the Anchorage LIO is David Hubbard there, followed by Linda Gutierrez.
My name is David Hubbard, and I would like to say that I am a current person afflicted with asthma, and due to my use of e-cigarettes, I am an e-cigarette survivor, because I quit smoking because of my asthma, and e-cigarettes have improved my conditions exponentially. I can't say enough how much on my day-to-day well-being e-cigarettes have helped me. From statements made before, as in propylene glycol, it is used in inhalers. So just the mere ingredients that are used in our e-liquid that we use on our e-cigarettes. It improves my lung condition, it helps me breathe, and it doesn't have the harmful carcinogenic effects of cigarettes. That alone, I feel that you should remove e-cigarettes from this bill, because I feel it's very unfair, and it goes against anything as far as us having rights of smoking inside, and I feel like e-cigarettes should be removed from this bill. That's all. I'm against SB 209.
Thank you, Mr. Hubbard. We appreciate your testimony. Linda Gutierrez.
Good morning. My name is Linda Gutierrez, and I'm a resident of Anchorage. I support SB 209. I worked my way through college working in restaurants because of my school schedule. This was one of the few employment options available. Although I was not a smoker, I developed asthma from the effects of being in a smoking environment. And with all due respect to previous testimony, do not believe any business owner has the right to impact my health. Now that I am able to be out of that environment, I'm no more interested in breathing the supposedly safe aerosol of e-cigarettes than I was of cigarettes. I urge you please to support and pass SB 209 and allow all Alaska workers to work in smoke-free workplaces. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Linda. Next in Anchorage, Matthew Roster. And please correct your name for the record.
My name is Matthew Roster, and I'm strongly against SB 209. I was recently hospitalized and put in the ICU, and intubated and put on my support. When I woke, I found out that my affliction had been caused because of heavy cigarette use. When I was released from the hospital, I took up using e-cigarettes as an alternative to cigarettes. At that point, I discovered that they are incredibly valuable to people that are being afflicted with asthma, respiratory infections, or any other type of lung disease. I went through pulmonology, and a lot of the doctors that I spoke to about it highly recommended it. It is regulated by the FDA as far as the ingredients go. They have been studied and they have been tested. The only thing that is not regulated by the Food and Drug Administration is the combination of the ingredients. Most of the juices that I buy, me personally, are not made in China and are not made foreign. They are made here in America. And a lot of the people that I know that make them would be greatly, greatly affected if this bill was passed. They would not be making the same amount of money. Their businesses would be shut down, and it would just really put a hamper on a lot of these really great people I know. When I'm going through and I'm getting tested, I'm talking to my pulmonologists and doctors that have gone to school for a lot longer than I have, and they're sitting there and they're telling me that the tests that have been ran on these and the ingredients that's in these are safe and they're recommended for people with asthma or lung problems like I have. I haven't smoked a cigarette since, and I've been clean for about 3 months, and I implore you to please reconsider how this bill is worded and reconsider what you're going to do and how it's going to affect some people's lives. I am highly against SB 209.
Thank you for your testimony, Matthew. Again, just so that everyone knows, we're trying to go in order, so if we move around, we'll be back to your area. Next on the off-net is Cindy Powell, followed by Ellen Adlam. Cindy, welcome to Senate Finance.
Thank you so much. My name is Cindy Powell. I live in Anchorage, and I'm representing myself. I am a two-time cancer survivor. Cancer was caused by smoking cigarettes. Of course, I have since quit. I am in support 100% of Senate Bill 209. Every Alaskan, every human being deserves the right to breathe clean air, and this should include everyone's workplace. I ask that you include e-cigarettes in this bill. Studies are proving that the vapor from these cigarettes are not as benign as originally reported, and more research needs to be done. I just would like to briefly say to Crystal, Dale, and Gary, when you own a business, this bill is not asking you to ban smoking. It's not asking you to take anyone's rights away from them. If anything, we're asking that you give back the right to your employees, the right to breathe fresh air, clean air. As mentioned before, nobody should have to choose between their employment and their ability to make money and live and their health. And so
Thank you so much. The Senate Finance Committee, thank you for taking my testimony. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Ellen Adlam, please proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Ellen Adlam, and I am the consumer representative on both the National and State Board for the National Association of Community Health Centers. And I've also worked in the medical field for years and years and years as an x-ray tech, and I have seen firsthand the effects of secondhand smoke. So I'm very much in support of Senate Bill 209 with no opt-out and inclusion of the e-cigarettes. Thanks so much for your testimony, and good luck getting out of here on a Saturday, you guys.
Thank you, Ellen. Next in the Anchorage LIO, Anglo Real, and then followed by Logan Kling. Anglo, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee.
Good morning. Good afternoon. My name is Angelo Real. I'm the owner and operator of Real Vapes in Wasilla, Alaska. I stand against the denial of any opt-outs of House Bill 209. It has been proven in medical science that asthma is completely unaffected by the use of e-cigarettes. In fact, 98% of all asthma inhalers are propelled by the same inert ingredients as electronic cigarettes. I fully agree that secondhand smoke from tobacco is grotesque, and it stinks, and it is poison. I am here to defend our rights as Alaskan Americans. I own my own store, my wife and I, and we put all that we had into opening this small business. This bill, unamended, will wreck and destroy what we have created. I have hundreds of customers who are unbelievably grateful for the chance we have given them to live longer and healthier. I have multiple COPD and highly asthmatic clients and wives and husbands of clients that are asthmatic, and they are grateful now for their partners to vape instead of smoke. We only ask that you do not lump us in with tobacco. Think for a moment why the past retired Surgeon General would be the CEO of an e-cigarette company. I also would like to ask, this bill only be amended to people who own their own locations, and why would the government get to choose what I do inside my place of business? I believe that falls under communism. So if this bill passes, I'd like people to give for a minute the thought to the fact that it's been proven by OSHA and the FDA that vehicles produce more toxic air than every cigarette ever lit in the entire history of the world combined on a daily basis, but we still allow them to drive around in front of our work. That's all I have.
Thank you, Angelo. Next on the list in Anchorage LIO, Logan Kling. Logan, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee.
Hello, my name is Logan Kling, and I strongly oppose Senate Bill 209. I believe that as Americans, we have the choice to do what we please, and to smoke or vape, you have to be above 19 years old in the state of Alaska, so you're considered an adult. Adults can make their own decisions. For closing, I would like to state something that hasn't been said today. Vaping is not smoke. It is clearly vapor. Thank you.
Thank you for coming out. We appreciate everyone who's participating today. Next, off-net, George Pierce and Kasilov. Mr. Pierce, welcome.
Thank you for taking my testimony. Looks like you lost some of your chairs there. this bill, I feel it's an overreach. I am a non-smoker. I've never smoked. My wife's a non-smoker. This bill, I'm all in favor of non-smoking areas. There are rules and regulations, however, all set up for people that want to enjoy smoking. To eliminate smokers, you act like they're bad people. They're not bad people. If they want to smoke, it's not my right or your right to tell them when or where. You need to spend some time and have designated smoking areas. The legislators have a smoking area, and it under that current proposal, SB 209, everything was exempt. And now you're making changes. So if you're going to change this law, you should exempt bars. I like to thank Mr. Superman for standing up for his rights and everybody else that's testifying. we have to stop the overreach of these, of the government telling people what they can and cannot do. Like I said, if there's an establishment that I want to go to and there are smokers there, I just don't go. I'm a non-drinker, so I don't go to the bars. It's not a hard thing to figure out. So the people that want to smoke and do what they want to do, they should have that right. By stripping that right out of them, you're kind of controlling what everybody does here, and that's an overreach. You know, it's harmful. I understand all that. I don't like it, but it's an overreach by doing what you're doing here, and I'm just wondering, all the empty chairs made me think of Clint Eastwood and talking to that empty chair there. So where's your legislators? I hope everybody's taking listening to the testimony that these people are talking to, you know. So anyway, the bill needs to be fixed. It needs to exempt bars and other people from having a place, and on the, every time you turn around, you're raising taxes on these cigarettes. That punishes them. So maybe you should take some of that money that you get off the taxes and build smoking rooms for these folks.
Mr. Pierce, thank you for your
testimony. And that's all I had to say.
Mr. Pierce, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your testimony. For those watching, senators have other meetings and obligations today. We actually almost have a full complement back. Our leadership is in another meeting right now, but everyone is in their seats. They're just trying to take on all of the state's obligations in the final days of session. We do appreciate your testimony. Going back to the Anchorage LIO, Richard Fields, followed by Corey Frisbee. Richard, welcome to the Senate Finance Committee.
Hi, and thank you for your time. My name is Richard Fields, and I'm opposed to the bill SB 209. Approximately 3 years ago, my mother died of lung cancer. I was a smoker myself for many, many years, 15 years or so. I tried everything I could to quit smoking, from patches to Nic to gum to Shantix, everything I could. I'm now been smoke-free for just about a year, thanks to electronic cigarettes. I could take a deep breath. I could run. I could play with my kids. I don't stink. And I attribute that to e-cigarettes. I don't think lumping them in with smoking is right. As American citizens, we have a right to choose. We have a right to choose to go to a bar. We have a right to choose not to go to a bar. We have a right to choose to go into a smoking establishment or not to. There are many options for people to go to non-smoking places. If you go into a vape shop, there's going to be vape. People are going to be vaping. And I call it vape because it is vaping. It's not smoking. It's a safer alternative. And it's an alternative that saved my life. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up is Corey Frisbee, followed by Fred Edlin. Mr. Frisbee, welcome to Senate Finance.
Hello. I'm Corey Frisbee, and I'm an e-cig user, and I'm against the SB 209 because for the past 3-4 months I've been off of cigarettes and chew at the same time, and I've been feeling great, and that's it. I'm just against the SB 209.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Fred Edlin, followed by Jackie Neese. Fred, welcome to Senate Finance.
Good morning. My name is Fred Edlin. I'm in opposition of SB 209, the heavy-handedness, the rights taken from people to make choices. I started 3 months ago. I actually haven't vape shops able to do some. I educated myself. I researched. I watched the negative media. I watched positive media. I educated myself. What we're going to do now with this law, people are going to be afraid. It's not an educated decision. It's half-hearted. And we need to, unfortunately, look at this law again before you try to pass it. We are taking away civil liberties on both sides. I understand smoke-free workplace. I understand personal freedoms. But we do need to step back and look at who we're trying to protect. We are not. This law is not going to protect the general public. It's one-sided as of right now. Thank you for your time.
Fred, thank you for your testimony. Next in Anchorage, Jackie Ness, followed by Jennifer Adzema. If you'd identify yourself for the record, and welcome to Senate Finance.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. My name is Jackie Ness, and I'm opposed to the bill, SB Bill 209, and with grouping e-cigarettes into this bill. I was a smoker for 26 years until I picked up vaping. I've never felt better. I believe that more studies need to be conducted before you group e-cigarettes into smoking, and they should not be grouped in with the smoking in this bill. A person should never be told what choice they have to make. Military members fight for us for these rights and our freedoms, but this bill wants to take that away from us. I believe that we should all have a choice in what we do. They have choices. Everybody has a choice to walk into a bar or into a vape shop, and I oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Neese. We appreciate your testimony. Jennifer Adzman, followed by Betty McTavish in Cordova.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jennifer Adzma, and I'm a resident and voter in Anchorage. I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 209 and the inclusion of e-cigarettes. I'm not asking to take away anyone's rights, but just to please take it outside. Please protect all Alaskans' health and pass this bill this session. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. In Cordova, Betty McTavish, followed by Zoya Palmavera in Anchorage.
Yes, good morning, members of the Senate Budget Committee. My name is Betty McTavish, and I'm calling in from Kodiak, a resident of Kodiak, calling in from Cordova, Alaska. I want to appeal to you for the passage of SB 209. We know the science. We know the health effects. Rural Alaskans are not protected from secondhand smoke as those in urban areas. Here in Cordova, smoking is even occurring around the emergency room at the hospital. All residents deserve to be protected from secondhand smoke equally across the state. Please include e-cigarettes. Do not allow the opt-out. And any budgetary costs with the passage of this bill cannot equal the health costs that Alaska residents suffer. Please expedite SB 209. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Betty. Is there anyone else in the Cordova LIO?
No, there is not. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Going off net, Zoya Ponomera, please correct your name for the record for me, and then followed by Aaron Cardwell in Anchorage.
Hello, my name is Zoya Ponomera. I'm a resident of Anchorage. I strongly support smoke-free indoor workplaces in Alaska, and I support the inclusion of the e-cigarette provision. I do not support the local opt-out provision. Please pass SB 209 because it will protect my right to breathe smoke through the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today, Zoya.
Thank you.
Next off net is Aaron Cardwell. Aaron, welcome to Senate Finance.
Yes, this is Aaron Cardwell. I represent Madden Murdoch LLC here in Anchorage. I'm not for the inclusion of e-cigarettes into the bill 209. And the reason for this, I just want to read a couple of ingredients, okay? Propylene glycol, anhydrous ethanol, promethanol, prozamyl 407, glycerol, which is vegetable glycerin, sodium hydrogen carbonate, level methanol, mint flavoring, choline flavoring, sucrose, acesulfamide, potassium, hydrochloric acid, purified water, and nicotine. Now, these are ingredients in an FDA-approved product, that is designed to stop, to prevent people from smoking, to help them stop smoking. And it's called Nicorette Quickness. Those ingredients, even if this bill passes, even if this bill is included, has the e-cigs included in it, will still be allowed in the workplace. It still will be allowed for me to sit at my desk at work and suck on this and exhale it into the air. Okay? One thing I wanted to add is the main ingredients in electronic cigarettes. Let me read those. Propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, flavoring, and nicotine. all four of those ingredients were in that FDA-approved product, that will still be allowed at the workplace, that the FDA has determined as being a safe product that clearly is allowed in indoors because it's a product. Just because it doesn't provide a cloud of vapor, it doesn't set off any triggers that are being perceived as being bad, doesn't mean that it's a bad product. So, a little bit about myself. I stopped smoking 4 years ago. 17 years I smoked. And it was the easiest time when I stopped smoking 4 years ago using electronic cigarettes. And I have never looked back. Okay. I feel better and everything. So, I just don't understand why we would want to include e-cigarettes into this under the presumption that there hasn't been studies done, and there has been studies.
Aaron, thank you for your testimony. Aaron, your time is up. We so appreciate you coming out to testify today.
Okay. But anyways, I'm finishing up really quick. I just wanted to include that, and I wanted to say that the e-cigarettes are not a bad thing. They are definitely will help people in quitting smoking, and they are most definitely a more healthy alternative to smoking, and I cannot support the inclusion of it in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cardwell. Next on OffNet is Kathy Jackman. Kathy, welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Kathy Jackman, and I am a senior citizen and resident of Palmer, Alaska. I support Senate Bill 209 and with the inclusion of e-cigarettes, and I ask you to do the same. I have lived with secondhand smoke for over 15 years of my life and have suffered from chronic respiratory infections for many years as a result of it. Support my right to breathe clean air, and also for all Alaska residents to breathe clean air. Thank you for your time.
Kathy, thank you for testifying in front of Senate Finance today. With that, I'd like to let everyone know that if you have written testimony that you'd like to provide the Senate Finance Committee, you can go to senate.finance.committee@akleg.gov. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 209? Anyone in Anchorage? Anyone in Mat-Su? Anyone at the Fairbanks LIO? Anyone in Kenai? Anyone in Cordova? Anyone off net? Is there anyone wishing to testify in Juneau? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed on Senate Bill 209. Brief at ease. We're back on the record, still here in Juneau. It's a beautiful day. This is the Senate Finance Committee. Next, we've closed the public hearing on Senate Bill 209. We're going to set that bill aside. And at this time, I'd like the committee to bring forward Senate Bill 141 and ask Senator Wilikowski's staff to join us at the table. Senator Wilikowski, welcome. What we'd like to do is hear a brief introduction of Senate Bill 141 and then go into public testimony. Senator Wilikowski, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Wilikowski. I represent East Anchorage and Elmendorf Air Force Base, and appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this. This is a very it's a small in size bill, but it's important. It's something that was brought to me by the Alaska National Guard Enlisted Association. What it would do is to provide a one free vehicle registration for Alaska Army and Air National Guard members. There are currently four other states that provide this benefit: Hawaii, New Mexico, Florida, Tennessee. Virginia gives National Guard members a 50% discount. I won't go into much more than that, Madam Chair, unless there are questions. I do have the President of the National Guard Enlisted Association, who was slated to testify. I know he's been waiting. This is his weekend where he's actually on duty, so I don't know if he'll be called. He's still on the line or not, but I appreciate the committee's time.
Are there questions for Senator Wilikowski? Seeing and hearing none, we'll move into public testimony. Is there anyone in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 141? Is there anyone off net wishing to testify on Senate Bill 141? We have someone calling in. Senator Wilikowski, will hold for just a moment to see if we can get them connected. Again, for those listening at home, if you'd like to provide us written testimony on Senate Bill 141 or any other bill before this committee, you can go to senate.finance.committee@akleg.gov. Senator Wilikowski, Amy Erickson is available for questions, but we don't have anyone else. Is there any further questions? Let me close the public hearing on Senate Bill 141. Is there any questions for Senator Wilikowski? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed, and we'll set that bill aside.
Thank you for your time.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. It is 11:46 in Senate Finance. The chairman has asked me to recess the meeting to the call of the chair. Expect for planning purposes to come back into Senate Finance a short time after the floor session is concluded today. Again, the Senate Finance Committee is in recess to the call of the chair.
Okay. We're bringing the Senate finance to order in case you guys were sleeping. You aren't anymore. Okay, so Saturday, April 12th, it's 10 after 5, and before we recessed, we were taking up Senate Bill 209, Regulation of Smoking. I would like to finish that particular bill, and then we're going to go right into Senate Bill 220 and have an overview of the PERS-TERS, and that will be all we'll be doing tonight. So, it's my understanding, Senate Bill 209, we finished public testimony. Thank you, Vice Chair Fairclough, for filling in. We didn't have committee discussion. Is there any additional discussion or comments on the Senate Bill 209? I just personally want to thank the sponsor for bringing the bill forward. I am a co-sponsor, as is Senator McGuire and Senator Ellis, and anybody else who wants to be a co-sponsor, I'm sure Senator Majiki would entertain that. We will go through the fiscal notes as well, but Senator Majiki, I want to give you an opportunity. You've heard the public testimony as well as the committee has, and just wanted to give you an opportunity for any final comments. Go ahead, Senator Majiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate Finance, you know, as you saw that we put some exemptions into the bill, we've listened to several hours now of public testimony. We've tried to respect both sides. You know, it's like this one side of the issue, the effects from one side of the issue have no adverse health effects on the other side. I don't know if I can clarify that any better, but I think you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. One side believes that, what was it that Oliver Wendell Holmes said, that the right to swing your fist ends where the other man's nose begins. And that's sort of what we're talking about here. And you know, it's funny because you hear some of the bar owners, and I know that every business owner lives in fear of some of these changes, but the reality of it is the results have been the opposite of what we're saying. And I have a couple letters here that you may have received. One is from Chilkoot Charlie's Mike Gordon, and he's one of the guys on the other side of this discussion. He's very much against the ordinance in Anchorage. Remember, half the state's living under it. We thought it was an appropriate discussion for the other half of the state, but he's now a big proponent of smoke-free workplaces, and just for his last paragraph, he says, "I, for one, have been around long enough to see common sense through the fog of purported individual rights. Please do the right thing and move this sensible measure forward." And same thing from Humpy's. You know, Humpy's has been a favorite place of mine every time I go to Anchorage. I just like that place. The fish tacos happen to be particularly good. And I would fight through the smoke when I would go there before the ban. And, you know, the second letter is from Pete Burns, general manager and head dishwasher. Please push through the smoking ban. Whether or not people want to argue over if it's good or bad for business, the ultimate goal is the health of Alaskans. And Mr. Chairman, we fund the Tobacco Alliance. This state funds the Tobacco Alliance. We've admitted as a state we've invested many, many millions of dollars in trying to help Alaskans remain free from the effects of secondhand smoke. This bill tries to save us $579 million annually, tries to improve the situation with low birth weights because of the effects of secondhand smoke and things like sudden infant death syndrome, which has proven to be connected to smoking as well. So I appreciate you moving it forward, and we'll see where this bill goes in the future. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, thank you, Senator Majiki, and I think Senator Fairclough and myself were on the assembly when this smoke-free ordinance came forward in Anchorage, and you're right. Chilkoot Charlie's was against it big time, but now, as you said, Mike Gordon, the owner, is a big supporter of it. So I do sympathize with some of the folks that we heard from that they're afraid their business is going to go down, but actually the opposite is happening in Anchorage anyway. The business has been going up because now more customers are coming who in the past didn't want to have to breathe the smoke while they ate or even walk through the smoking section to get to the non-smoking section. So Any other comments, questions? Okay. Okay. All right, then let's take a quick look at the fiscal notes. There are some. None of them look too large. Looks like a lot of them are for signage. Any comments on the fiscal notes, Senator Machicki?
Well, I do have some comments. I believe that the departments have been very conservative on a worst-case scenario, but I believe the organization's interested in eliminating the effects of secondhand smoke for employees are willing to assist with those sign changes.
Yeah, I'm personally okay with these fiscal notes because I think if you can prevent some folks from breathing secondhand smoke, they'll probably be less in Medicaid costs and health costs. So additional comments, questions? Okay. Senator Kelly?
Chairman, I would move that we move from committee SB 209 version Y with attached fiscal notes and accompanying recommendations.
Okay. Any objections to CS for Senate Bill 209, Hess version Y, moving out of committee? Seeing, hearing none, bill moves out of committee. Thank you, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senate Finance.
With that, we'll take just a brief at ease, and let's go ahead and bring up the next presenters to present the PERS, TERS, Senate Bill 220.
back. We're going to listen to a presentation on SB 220, which is the PERS-TERS bill. It is essentially, it's a governor's bill at this time. And this is our first hearing on it. We're going to hear it today. Probably won't hear it tomorrow. So go ahead. Just give us what you got.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Angela Rodell, Commissioner Designee for the Department of Revenue. We've prepared for you a presentation that I'm going to walk through with the assistance of the state's Chief Investment Officer, Gary Bader, and the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration, Mike Barnhill. Let me just start before we get started. I want to add also that we're prepared to do a sectional analysis of the bill after the presentation, if that's the committee's desire. You should have received from us both a copy of the presentation as well as a letter from Buck Consultants, which is the actuary that did an actuarial analysis of the governor's proposal. And we're happy to answer any questions that you might have. I want to start out by thanking the committee and the committee staff for all the work that you have been doing with the not only with the administration but on your own on this very important topic. Pension funding and its associated liability has been a concern for all of us for a while now. As I was preparing my remarks for today, I started to think about the history of this, and in November 2010, the On Board held a very lengthy workshop, which I know staff members in Ledge Finance also participated in, as to the unfunded liability and what was causing it. We move forward to September 2011, and in Fairbanks, the Governor Parnell came to the On Board meeting to talk about his concerns at that time with the unfunded liability and requested the On Board to take a hard look at what potential options were. And the On Board did that, and the On Board's reaction, or their solution, was to adopt level dollar. And the reason behind that was that they looked at the cost of various proposals, and while this had near-term budgetary impacts, overall, it would cost less than other options on the table. And for that reason, they adopted a level dollar actuarial method. The first time that a level dollar amount would be included in any budget would have been for the fiscal year 15 budget. And as we got closer to the imposition of that and we saw what was going on in terms of revenue projections as well as other budgetary considerations, we decided that it was in the state's interest to look at putting in a lump sum amount and to put budgetary control on an ongoing payment and to limit that payment to $500 million. So that is where we start today. And with that, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm going to turn it over to Deputy Commissioner Mike Barnhill to talk about the retirement and benefits and some basic facts.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Administration. I'm going to run quickly through some slides that we have put before this committee. Usually once a year we come before the committee, and so you've seen many of these before. They're more or less updated for recent actuarial evaluation. So the organization of our pension systems is a segmented organization with three entities having some share of the responsibility of administering our pension system. On the far left, we have the Division of Treasury, which invests the assets, which are today approximately $20 billion. Then we have the Alaska Retirement Management Board, which was created in 2005 through the SB 141 legislation, composed of nine appointed members by the governor, and they are the fiduciary of the assets, and they meet about five times a year to review asset allocation and investment. And then finally, my department, through the Division of Retirement and Benefits, administers the various benefit plans, pension plans, healthcare plans for our members. The next page shows the membership, and the numbers are small, but just to summarize this for you, we today have approximately 27,000 active employees in the public employee retirement system and the teachers retirement system, close to 42,000 retirees, and then when you add in the dependents, We're over 120,000 people that are either active, retiree, or dependents of this plan. So it's a meaningful slice of the population of the state of Alaska. This chart here shows the benefit projections that the actuary has given us between now and 2070, through the end of the 2070s. These are the benefits that the actuary projects will be paid in each year over that period of time. And so we're paying out today about $1.5 billion in pension and health care benefits. By 2036, that amount is going to increase to just over $3.5 billion before it begins to tail off. All told, we're looking at over $130 billion in benefits between now and the late 2070s. And we've got $20 billion in the bank to pay that. So the question that's been before the legislature and the governor is, how do we turn that $20 billion into $130+ billion? And for that, we turn to the next page, Mr. Chair. And we look at the basic actuarial formula that actuaries put in all of their presentations, usually on page one. You take contributions, you take those contributions, invest them, and hopefully that amount will equal the benefits that will come due at some point in the future, plus the expenses of administering the system. We have two forms of contribution, employee contribution and employer contribution, in our defined benefit system. For the public employees, employee contribution amount is 6.75%. For Peace Fire, it's 7.5%. And for teachers, the employee contribution amount is 8.65%. That amount usually doesn't change. On occasion, it has changed in the past. The bigger contribution amount comes from employers. And over the past decade, that employer contribution amount in the teacher system has ranged from 12% to over 70%. There's an extreme amount of volatility there because if the actuarial projections are not achieved, the employer takes the risk and the employer's contribution rate has to go up. And I've listed a variety of actuarial assumptions, inflation, investment return, mortality, retirement date, and that's how we structure a defined benefit system. The actuary looks at the contributions that are expected to come in, projects what's going to happen in the future, and then if those projections aren't realized, then we go back to the employer through the form of a higher contribution rate. Page 7 shows the various events that have happened over the past decade to get us where we are today. Just a quick recap, through the 1990s, our actuary did not properly project health care costs. There was an actuarial audit done in 2002, which recognized the problems with those actuarial projections. At the same time, we had investment downturns in 2001, 2002. The combined impact of those resulted in our first unfunded liability, which we learned about in 2003, of $4.1 billion. And since then, things have gotten worse. We had a huge downturn in our investments in 2009, and today we have approximately $11.9 billion unfunded liability. The legislature weighed in 2001, closed the defined benefit tier to new employees effective July 1st, 2006. And then in 2008, the legislature capped contributions from employers because the rates had just gotten too high. They crested over 30% for the public employee system, well over 50% for the teacher system, and the legislature needed to come in and provide relief to our municipal employers and our school districts so that they could actually operate. We capped employer contribution rates at 22% for the public employee system, 12.56% for the teacher system. Page 8 shows the balance sheet as of the FY12 valuation. There is a bit of a lag here. The onboard will be considering the FY13 valuation at its next meeting in 2 weeks and won't adopt that. But as of June 30th, 2012, the funding ratio for the public employee system is 61%, for the teacher system, 52%. Sometimes we look at this metric to evaluate how healthy a defined benefit pension system is. Actuaries often use the 80% metric as an indicia of a healthy system, and for both of these systems, we're well under 80%, so we know that there are issues with the funding status of both PERS and TERS. As I said earlier, there's about $20 billion that the Treasury is investing today. There are some unrealized investment gains built up into that. Page 9 and 10, the committee has seen before. These are the various approaches to date prior to the governor's plan for providing relief to our school districts and our municipalities and addressing the unfunded liability in terms of how we pay it down. On the left-hand side, we see the payment that the state has made to date on behalf of public employees, PERS employers and TERS employers. And to date, the state has appropriated nearly $3.3 billion from FY08 to FY14. Of that, 1.7 has been paid on behalf of school districts, 53 school districts. And then about 1.6 paid on behalf of participating employers and PERS. Of that 1.6, the majority of it is for the state of Alaska as an employer. For the remaining participating municipalities, about $609 million the state has paid. And I'd just like to pause and say that I believe all participants and PERS and TERS, participating employers, actives and retirees, owe the state and the legislature, quite frankly, a debt of gratitude, because that kind of support for these systems with the kind and the magnitude of the unfunded liabilities they have is really quite unique, I think, in the country. If you look out at other states and the support that they've given to municipal pension systems, teachers' retirement systems, I don't think you see the level of support in other state legislatures. And that's exemplified by the fact that we have municipalities in other states going bankrupt. Detroit, Stockton, California, San Bernardino, California. And this legislature has not allowed that to happen. We thank you for that.
Mike, can I ask you to pause just for a second there? Senator Meyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I meant to ask this earlier. So to get up to the 80% mark for PERS and TERS, do you know about how much cash infusion that would take to get us to that point?
If we put in the $3 billion that the governor is proposing, we won't quite get to the 80%. And if you take a look at the actuarial letter from Buck that's dated today, and you look at, I believe it's Exhibit 2 and 4 to that letter, you can see the date on which we will hit 80%. And I will pull that up for you right now.
And if I may follow up, Mr.
Chairman.
So is it easier to get to 80% if you focused on one and not the other? I mean, would it be easier for TERS, something that we are 100% responsible for, to maybe focus on getting that up and over 80%? And do we know what that dollar amount would be?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, it's hard to say when you're talking appropriating billions of dollars from, and the only real source that we think there is the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and that requires a three-quarter vote. It's hard to say that any of these approaches is easy. TERS has a $4.7 billion unfunded liability, and so if we funded TERS more than we funded PERS, could we get to paying down TERS quicker or get to that 80% mark quicker? And the answer is yes. It's a smaller unfunded liability. The PERS unfunded liability is $7.4 billion. So you get to that 80% quicker by funding TERS, for sure. And to your original question, under the governor's proposal, in PERS, we would hit the 80% level in 2022. And in TERS, I'm sorry, no, that's incorrect. It would be 2025. That's Exhibit 4. And in TERS, we would hit the 80% level in 2027.
That's on Exhibit 6.
I'm sorry?
That's on Exhibit 6.
Exhibit 6. Are these, these marked somewhere?
This one.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Okay, gotcha. Okay. Well, I agree with you on the TERS would be easier, PERS not as easy to get to 80%, but also on the PERS, that's a shared responsibility. When you say 60% state, 40% municipality?
Through the chair, absolutely. It's a shared responsibility, and I think there's consensus in the building, and even with municipal employers, that there could be some additional cost sharing between the state of Alaska as an employer and the municipal employers. The question is how best to do that.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Sure. So let's go back to page 9 and page 10. These are different ways of this addressing in our presentation. Yes, sir. These are different ways of addressing how to pay down the unfunded liability. So until 2012, the ARM Board, the Alaska Retirement Management Board, had methodologies to amortize the unfunded liability over a 25-year period at what we call a level percentage of pay. And the level percentage of pay simply means that the payments on the unfunded liability will go up at the same rate as payroll is expected to go up, which is approximately 4%. And so what you see as a product of that methodology is that the trend of the payments over time from FY15 through the FY20s, the payments go up. So sometimes refer to this as a backloaded payment methodology, and you can see that in this chart. As Commissioner Rodell indicated earlier, there was concern that this approach may be more expensive over time, and so the ARM Board began in 2010 to look at a variety of other approaches. And since 2010, we've literally run dozens and dozens of scenarios trying to find an affordable, fair, and appropriate way of addressing the unfunded liability. Ultimately, if you turn to page 10, the ARM Board landed on a new form of amortization, which we call level dollar. And level dollar is simply that. It provides for level payments over time. It's the amortization formula is actually identical to a house mortgage formula. You borrow money to buy a house, you'll have exactly the same payments on that house in year one as you will in year 30. So under the level dollar approach, payments, it's sometimes referred to as a more front-loaded amortization methodology. You can see that in this chart where payments would jump in FY14 from approximately $630 million to $975 million in FY15. Then they crest over $1 billion for 4 years and then start to trend down. That was the ARM Board's recommendation on how to address this. And I think it caused some concern within the administration and within this building about whether, while it was a cheaper approach from a total dollar investment perspective from the state of Alaska, money out of the general fund or out of the CVR, and it's cheaper because it goes back to the old adage, pay now or pay more later. And the ARM Board thought that this was a preferable way to go because over time we would be paying less. The question then becomes affordability, and that has really been the core, I think, of the discussion for the entire session about what is the appropriate balance to strike between the needs of today. We've got multiple stakeholders that come into this room every year seeking to claim a certain amount of state resources. How do we balance those needs today versus the needs of tomorrow and 10 years from now, 20 years from now? The governor then weighed into this last fall, and we began to try and come up with a way that would strike that balance in a different way. And Commissioner Rodell will explain that approach in a few minutes. But this chart right here was of concern because we believed it was not affordable to the state over the next 5 years. And with that, I'll turn the mic over to Mr. Bader to explain a few investment issues.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
What are you going to explain? I didn't hear what he said you were going to explain.
I'm going to talk about the investments. My name is Gary Bader, the Chief Investment Officer.
Can I pause just for a second? On the investments, and let's stick with the meat of the bill, because I think we've heard testimony from you maybe twice on the investments, or if it wasn't from you, it's from a number of sources. So if you, I hate to bring you out at this time on a Saturday and you just sit there as eye candy. but if we could just kind of stick to what's in the proposal in the bill rather than kind of a general, this would be, that'd be kind of more of a, you know, January 28th presentation. So go ahead. Angela, I think, probably.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving forward then to slide 16, this gets into the premise behind the bill. So once again, we do have an unfunded liability today combined between the PERS and TERS of $11.9 billion. The employer assistance payments to PERS and TERS have risen from $629 million in fiscal year 14 to well over $1 billion per year. Funding that solely through the operating budget does crowd out funding for other vital public services. So not only has it caused an issue from an operations standpoint at the state, rating agencies have also expressed concern with the increasing liability. The proposal you have before you is to invest $3 billion into the PERS and TERS Trust Fund. We would place $1.12 billion into the Teachers Retirement Fund and $1.88 billion into the Public Employees Retirement Fund. The source of this money would be the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and it does include a state employer assistance payment for fiscal year 15. Beginning in fiscal year 16, the state assistance would be fixed at $500 million annually, so $157 million would go into the PERS Trust annually, and $343 million would go into the TERS Trust. Those payments are projected to continue through fiscal year 2036, and that length of time will shorten or lengthen depending on the actuarial gains or losses that we experience. So looking at the chart, as you saw the earlier charts in Mr. Barnhill's presentation, what this looks like is you see the large lump sum payment coming in and then the steady payments over the next 21 years. And what this does is provide budget durability and stability over the next few years. You can see the previous 6 years, the volatility that we have had in the payments over that time period, and this will allow us to smooth those payments out. So this approach pays down the retirement system debt rather than passing it on. It's a comprehensive and straightforward approach that addresses problems in both PERS and TERS. It addresses our largest budget driver while keeping our promise to our retired public servants. It will dramatically reduce future operating budget obligations and provides predictability for future planning. It will improve municipal balance sheets and align our interests with those of the municipalities by sharing in the gains and losses. And it does address the number one credit concern raised by rating agencies. And finally, it will improve and strengthen the health of the retirement system. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, we're happy to take questions or move on to the sectional at your pleasure.
Yep. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, thanks for the presentation. Since December, when you first addressed us, I believe it was in Fairbanks, we keep coming back to this address as the number one credit concern raised by rating agencies. Hypothetically, if we were to make an infusion, would we, I don't believe I've ever seen anything in print from the rating agencies, and if I have, I apologize, but if we were to make this infusion, would there be something that we could see from the rating agencies that our credit worthiness is A-OK, for lack of a better term?
Go ahead, Angela.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, the rating agencies issue reports when the state either issues debt or they do it. If the state didn't issue any debt in the coming year, they'll do an annual update report. When we have new legislation, we will go back and brief them on what that legislation or extraordinary actions that the legislature, and this I would count as an extraordinary action that the legislature has taken to address the liability. Generally, they will issue at least some sort of public statement. If you remember last year, Moody's did a report on the passage of SB 21 and why they thought that that was of benefit to the state. So we would expect to see something, perhaps not right away, but over the course of, as the legislation gets adopted.
Thank you. Senator Fairclough.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. Commissioner, is it true that about 10% of the overall credit rating from bond readers have to do with our liability, or is something else looked at in that regard? And how I want you to balance your answer is against the 10% about your reserves. So is that correct first, that the two different components that the bond rating agency would use, at least for those two criteria, were 10% on reserves and then 10% on our pension liability?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough, each of the rating agencies has their own individual criteria. I have before me, and I'm happy to share it with members of the committee, the U.S. state rating methodology published by Moody's Investor Service. In that, financial strength counts for 30% of the rating, and financial strength would include the funds. So, for example, do you have rainy day funds in excess of 10% with requirements to rebuild the rainy day fund if drawn upon? As you know, the Constitutional Budget Reserve does have repayment mechanisms. Another part of that 30%, does the state, and this is for AAA states, and these are things Alaska does and does well, no external cash flow borrowing in the current year, no need for internal borrowing or use of alternative liquidity. In other words, we don't have to issue tax anticipation notes in order to fund our liquidity needs because we have sufficient cash on hand to fund all of our appropriations. So the reserves count for 30% in the 30% calculation of how Moody's in specific looks at it.
Debt
counts for an additional 20%, and debt is both long-term liabilities, such as our general obligation debt, and it is also pension debt. And excuse me. And it should be noted, Moody's does their own adjustments to the state's net pension liability, so they make other adjustments when they're looking at the pension liability to get an idea as to what that factors. So the pension liability counts towards 20% of the state's rating, and the reserves count 30%.
Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Senator Chair. Just a couple questions. The question that Senator Bishop asked, we've heard that if we don't do a certain approach to this, that we would get a letter or some message saying that, you know, we're heading towards some choppy financial water. But really, as you mentioned, it's the accumulated debt. In other words, it's not just this particular issue that's going to impact our bond rating. It's our bonds, this liability, and potential other liabilities that we have, and looking at that in the context, like you said, of potential revenue, correct?
Correct.
So this in and of itself, whatever we do with this, this does not cause the bond rating outfits to give us a letter saying you're in bad shape. It's the accumulative effect.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, they've noted in reports that when we look at strengths and challenges, this is a challenge. And there'll be a specific line. What could cause the rating to go down? This pension liability continues to become too big of a budget driver, and it doesn't get addressed, and it doesn't get taken care of. So it is identified as a credit concern, but the state is rated AAA and stable for very good reasons. So,
right, but if we had next year and the year after, bond obligations, theoretically speaking, of $5 billion for a gas pipeline, would that also have an impact on our rating?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, absolutely.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Can I continue with
Go ahead.
And changing gears, and maybe I missed this, but when examining other approaches, like the House had an approach, why do you feel that this approach is the best way to go, as opposed to what the House had, or a modification of this, or potential a plan that the Senate comes up with? What is it about this approach that you feel is the best way to go at this point? What does it do that the other approaches may not do?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I think what this approach does is it recognizes the situation we're in right now. So it takes care of putting in a lump sum, but it also recognizes that additional contributions are necessary, and that lump sum is insufficient, for lack of a better word, to make, in and of itself, make the trust funds healthy. So what this does is it recognizes that ongoing obligation that the state has. It allows the fund to continue to receive funds in an amount. It amortizes the debt over 20 years, which is what we do with our other debt liabilities. And I think it puts us in a place 10 years from now, when we're looking at potentially gas FID decision in 2018, I'm backing off my date, sorry, 5 years from now, that we'll be in a better position with an unfunded pension liability, so because we will have paid a significant amount towards that liability.
Just one more question.
Go ahead.
So if we put more money into it, what would your reaction be to that approach? We put another $1 billion into it, or $2 billion into it?
Through the
lump sum.
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, I think that's something that we would take a look at, and what the ongoing obligation would be for doing that. I think that we landed, well, I know we landed on the $3 billion amount because we did consider other needs on the reserves, and that was an amount that we were willing to commit, but we would have to look at the proposal and look at what the effect would be on additional contributions in future years as a result of that increase. Obviously, that contribution requirement will go down if more is put up front.
Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. Co-Chairman, sorry about that. I'm going to go back to Senator Bishop's original question, too, as far as our credit rating, because it seems like as long as we're making our yearly payments, isn't that really all they're concerned about? Granted, the yearly payments keep going higher and higher, become more and more of a challenge, but if we are anticipating more revenue from oil production in the near future, it seems like we should be able to make those payments.
Go ahead, Angel.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think this is the challenge that we continue to face with the revenue forecast and the expense forecast. And when we look at the pension liability taking up greater and greater percentage of the unrestricted general fund operating budget, the concern becomes that is not something that will continue to have support, especially with a closed system. I think we all intend to make those payments. I have no doubt this body, the state, has always lived up to its obligations. There's no reason to believe it won't. But from the rating agency perspective, when they're looking at these increasing percentage on an unrestricted fund requirement, and they go based on what all the other states are faced with in challenges, they question that commitment. And they keep it as a concern because they see the liability inching up rather than inching down. And so that's why it continues to be a concern.
Okay, if I can
continue.
Yeah, and like Senator Bishop said too, if there is some sort of documentation we can get from the bond rating agencies. That would be helpful because, as you said, we've never defaulted, so we have a perfect record. And I would think that they would also look at the history there and see that, you know, we're good for it. They'll see that we got a permanent fund that, you know, hopefully we never have to use, but it's sitting there. And so does, as the bill's written here, does this lock us into annual payments of $500 million?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, what the bill does is it does not lock you into a payment. It rather provides that the payment will be a fixed amount subject to appropriation. If actuarial gains occur, it allows you to appropriate a smaller amount. It also provides for the actuary to recalculate based on actuarial losses and recommend a higher payment should that be necessary. So it recognizes a fixed amount, but continues to give the legislature the opportunity and the option to appropriate both less or more should the circumstances warrant that.
Okay, I guess I'm confused. And how does that differ than the pay-as-you-go method?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the pay-as-you-go method did not, from my standpoint, allow for or recognize that ongoing appropriation. And so this recognizes both the actuarial calculation and the commitment to making an ongoing payment.
Okay, and if I may?
Mm-hmm.
So if we do what's being proposed here and we do the cash infusion, would we still have to make the $700 million payment for FY15, or does the $3 billion cover that?
Through the chair, the Senator Meyer, the $3 billion includes the $700 million, or you could argue it includes the $975 million of level dollar if you took the on board amount, but it includes that amount.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Here's what I'm struggling with, Angela. I'm not seeing vast amounts of differences in the approaches that would justify the fear on the department's behalf for the pay-as-you-go, not just the department, but for bond raters. And I talked to you about this before, and it's something that was always very frustrating me working for departments and other companies and stuff. When the bond rater boogeyman comes up, all conversation stops. And what I hear from Angela and the bees, as you know, you're all known as, is bond rater perspective. You just said it a few minutes ago. Bond rater perspective. And you were a bond rater, weren't you?
No, Mr. Chairman. I have never worked for the rating agencies.
Okay. Not that was a strike against you. You've got a great resume. the perspective is all about the bond rating. This people at this table, we've got a lot of different things other than just bond rating to look at. And I never quite hear you make the case beyond bond rating for why we shouldn't go with pay-as-you-go. Now, we will do that when we come back. Okay. Not tonight, though, okay? Just take a couple more questions, and we're going to can it for the night. Senator Fairclough?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm looking on page 18, but it really has to do with our unfunded pension liability, so all of this does. Ties in with page 8, slide 8. On page 18, my first question has to do with the effect on our partners and the accumulation of the 38% and the extension of the flat payments that you're proposing and what that means to municipalities. And I know sometimes we don't think about that, or maybe we think that we've capped them, and so if we need to extend our payments, they need to be there with us. So that's the first question. Have you calculated and analyzed the additional employer contributions that would be required at a local level to support this plan?
Through the chair, Senator Fairclough. Yes, those payments have been calculated. I don't have them at my fingertips, but they can be derived from the exhibits to the Buck letter. But generally speaking, there is absolutely an additional burden on participating PERS employers through the extension of the amortization from what we have now expected to end in 2031 to 2036, 37. Again, this goes back to a comment I made at the beginning, is I think there's a recognition that cost sharing, particularly in the PERS system, is important. It's a shared liability. In 2008, we made a judgment that the way to share that liability was to cap employer contribution rates at 22%. The problem with that judgment that we made is a huge new unfunded liability emerged in 2009. And under our solution in 2008, the state absorbed 100% of that, which is why these numbers keep going up in the form of state assistance. So in trying to, again, strike a balance, because we've got multiple stakeholders with different interests, what is the best, fairest, most appropriate way to strike the balance? And in this regard, there are a variety of ideas. One is, why don't we increase the contribution rate for the participating PERS employers above 22%? That's a way of doing immediate cost sharing. As we evaluated that, we concluded that that would impose immediate additional and unanticipated burdens not only on our participating PERS employers, but all school districts are also in PERS. All 53 are in PERS.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. More what I needed specifically that I think is important to all of us is specifically the cost to our community. So I believe that Anchorage is somewhere in the $200 million range if we meet all the assumptions for those extended years. I'm not saying that's good, bad, or otherwise. I'm just saying that the committee might want to know what those numbers look like. Mr. Chairman, this...
If I can just break in. You know, we love you guys. You're great. You guys have helped us out so many times. We're getting towards the end of the session. We're all very tired. If you could just keep your answers. Don't riff on stuff. Just answer the questions, okay, please. But you know we love you, so go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. I'm wondering why the governor chose this particular allocation into the PERS, TERS equally. And I've warned you this one was coming. From what I can tell and what Mr. Teal from our finance division has shown us is that if we, and maybe Mr. Barnhill, maybe it was you who showed me originally, that the investment into the TERS system is 100% our responsibility, and we could drive those numbers down much quicker by writing that system in a better way. So why did you choose the particular mix that you did when we could actually drive the overall operating costs down or the cash calls down by putting most of it over in the TERS system?
Mr. Chair, without riffing too much, Senator Fairclough, there are a variety of reasons. I mean, I think on a pro rata basis, there's more unfunded liability in PERS, so when we put this together, it made sense to put more of the balance on the PERS side. But, you know, there are a variety of ways of slicing and dicing that. And, yes, if you go more TERS heavy, it will pay off more in terms of a lower draw on the general fund.
So then, Mr. Chairman, the last call for question for tonight, because it's a big issue for us to deal with. But taking those comments into account, the unfunded liability ratio, which the bond raters and the actuaries are looking at, are actually higher, per se. The unfunded liability is higher in the TERS system. So it seems to me that if we were trying to raise the ship or the water together, the actuarial, I think it was the task force on reviewing pension funds, has started to say 80% is good, but you know we get in critical position when we're coming down to those lower rates on the ratio. And so why wouldn't we look at that particular ratio? Because I hear what you're saying on dollars. There are more dollars owed to the PERS system, but the ratio of what the task force at least has recommended on the, I'm not sure if I call it a stoplight, but the red, the yellow, and the green for how they're looking at pensions, it seems like we could get those percentages up above a worrisome level for both by still, again, shifting more into the TERS system.
And as you answer, would you address this as well? Is 60% what you're looking at as a kind of a minimum for TERS?
In terms of a funding ratio,
yeah.
We would like to get above 60% for sure.
That's the floor, right?
And so, Mr. Chair, Senator Fairclough, why not do that? It's a completely legitimate area of exploration. It's something that we're absolutely willing to engage with this committee and others in the building. How we slice and dice this is a fair question.
Any other questions? Senator Meyer?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Just two questions, because I'm still trying to wrap my hands around this. So the bill says subject to appropriation, and I'm trying to visualize what a bond rater is going to think, because that would also show some uncertainty if it says subject to appropriation, that we may not appropriate the full amount or the amount that they would like us to. Can you shed any light on that?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the reason for subject to appropriation is quite honestly to recognize the constitutional right of future legislatures to make appropriation decisions, that we can't bind future legislatures.
So again, does that give bond raters cause for concern?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I think it's important to note what the direction is being done here in this, and it's recognizing that we're moving to a fixed amount, to a fixed annual contribution amount, $343 million for TERS, $157 million for PERS, and that we've made avenues available to adjust that amount. That's what investors, people looking at the state, making decisions about the state, will be looking to is the flexibility that you maintain, and that you're not locking into something you can't sustain.
Okay, but again, it's subject to appropriation, so if we don't have the money, we can't make the payment. But that, well, I'll leave that aside. One issue we haven't talked much about, and I guess the reason why I've always felt not too bad about our unfunded liability, is unlike almost 46 other states, I think we're only one of four states that actually accounts for the medical mm-hmm. part of the liability. In fact, I was told that that's almost $4 billion, so if you subtract $4 billion from the $12 billion, now you're looking at an unfunded liability of closer to $8 billion. Do we get any credit from the bond raters for accounting for the medical in our unfunded liability, unlike most of the other states?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, we do get credit for funding that.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you guys, appreciate it. Senator Meyer, why don't you talk to us about the schedule?
Okay, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tomorrow will be a pretty light day, actually. We've been rolling a couple House bills that we haven't heard yet. Shouldn't take long at all. It seemed like I've met with most of the members. 1:30 seemed to be a decent time to get started tomorrow. Does that work for everyone? Okay, yeah, and I wouldn't think it would be more than an hour or two. That's all I got.
Take a brief at ease. Senator Meyer, does that conclude your
scheduling?
And we don't have James. We don't have anything to announce about conference committee, do we? Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, then no more on the PERS tomorrow. Is that correct?
Not tomorrow.
Okay.
We're adjourned.